What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. And as most of you who listen to this podcast know, we have an absolutely amazing sponsor. And in this particular episode, I have the privilege of bringing that sponsor on. I want to welcome Ross and Kara from F-Bomb Nutrition. Two amazing people who have been so supportive in everything we do here at the Warrior Soul Podcast, simply because they really want to help veterans out. And I really can't ask for more than that. I think that's absolutely amazing. I met these two back at Paleo FX 2017 in Austin, Texas. They had this big, awesome truck that said F-bomb on it. And so I had to go up and see what was going on. And they handed me a package that contained a bunch of little packets like this. And they were full of fats. And I've been doing the ketogenic diet for about 6 years now. And it was awesome. I tried some of the stuff in there. They had these ridiculously delicious macadamia nut butters mixed up with like sea salt and chocolate and everything like that. And I got to know these two. I got to go out to Flagstaff, Arizona about a week or two ago and see how, where this stuff is created and see how far they've come. So I wanted to bring them on the show because as an entrepreneur myself, I love to hear about the entrepreneurial journey. And a lot of times, when people look at successful entrepreneurs, they see, you know, the branding, they see the success. They don't really see the pain. They don't see the sleepless nights. They don't see, you know, you ripping your hair out because you can't get a label right, or because your website isn't working well, or because you can't figure out how to get these shipments right or anything like that. They don't see all the work that goes into it. So I wanted to bring Ross and Kara on to kind of talk about their story. So guys, welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Although we've had none of those issues you mentioned. No, none.
It's just been all easy.
I think everyone, everyone from typos on packages to labeling issues to sleepless nights. But I know we wouldn't have traded it for anything.
No.
So
been fun.
Let's start at the beginning and kind of talk about one. How'd you guys meet up? How did you guys get together first off? Cause you seem like such a great couple. What's the story behind that?
We actually met through my ex-wife, oddly. No.
Well, really we met at the gun show.
Yeah. We met at the gun show.
It's kind of a long story. It's a good story.
The literal gun show. You guys met at a gun show.
Cause that's the great place to meet people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
No, you know, so my ex-wife had gotten into CrossFit, and Kara and her ex-husband were doing CrossFit at the time. And through just a couple of CrossFit parties, I had met Kara and we chatted, and I knew her first name, didn't know her last name or know her well. And we both ended up divorced just separately, obviously, but I had taken my former stepson to the gun show to look at knives, and Kara was there with a couple of her coworkers looking at pistols. And as a former police firearms instructor, I dropped the best line on her ever. I said, you know, if you buy that pistol, I could polish your feed ramp for you. And
I thought that was a bit forward of it.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit forward, but I meant it.
It'll work out.
I'd been through the Glock armor school, and so she was looking at a Glock, and that's how we met. We texted and ended up having lunch the next day, and here we are.
There you have it.
That's awesome. That's awesome that you guys both met at the gun show, and that's awesome that Kara was there looking for pistols, and that's a really awesome pickup line. Very, very cool. So,
yeah.
Getting into this realm that you stepped into, so you were both in the CrossFit world. when did you start thinking about the ketogenic diet and learning about the ketogenic diet? At what point did that happen?
Ross's story.
Actually, I came into keto through the Atkins program about 26 years ago. My father had passed away. My father and both his brothers, all three of them were medical doctors, and my dad had passed away. It was suicide and depression, but you know, still he had diabetes issues. Both his brothers had diabetes. One ended up with a pancreas and kidney transplant, all kinds of issues. And it was all related. We have this family history of diabetes. So my uncle Dean, who was still practicing as a cardiologist at Johns Hopkins at the time, gave me an Atkins book. And he said, you know, I think this is a better way for us to eat with this family history. And I did it. Now, for a long time, about 20 of these 26 years, I was eating too much protein. The Atkins program is sort of soft on protein, but still, I would stay ketogenic as much as possible. And with too much protein, it you still get the cravings. You end up converting protein to glucose, and it makes it more challenging. But once I added in a lot more fat, it became much easier to sustain and just smooth and painless and comfortable. And so that's how I came about this and kind of what led us to the business. But I'll let Kara share her keto paleo story.
Yeah, and I kind of came in from the paleo side of it, which I was working well for me from some food sensitivity issues, and then learn more about keto. And that really made sense because I had some insulin resistance and some of that stuff going on that so many people do. And keto was a good fit.
Awesome. So
that's how I got there.
So,
and it was, I was a police officer at the time down for the city of Phoenix. And mm-hmm. of course, being keto was great because there were a lot of times when during the shift, you know, you couldn't eat. Yeah. Despite your best intentions, you can't eat and you don't want to get hangry and shaky and not a good scenario. So it was very convenient. I have not suffered any of the health issues that, you know, my other family members have had. And it's just worked out well for me. But it was the keto and the need to get extra fats into our diet that really led us to start Love You Foods and the F-bomb stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the police officer aspect of it, because, you know, there's studies that look at decisions that judges have made, and they find that judges make more lenient decisions if they've had lunch and their blood sugar is not low. And you can imagine, I mean, just my experience in the Marine Corps, I remember, yeah. You know, when if I hadn't had chow for a while, if I ran out of things to snack on my MREs, I would start to get a little bit foggy. I'd start to fall asleep, you know, and I would do everything I could to try to stay awake. And I imagine just, you know, the ability to make a split second decision that could determine life or death as a police officer really helps to have a very stable blood sugar, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, just being able to get through a shift and feel okay if you can't eat, all of that's tied in together. I mean, there's so many health benefits and life benefits to keto, and we're not out to convert anybody, but we're certainly believers just because of how it's worked for us.
Absolutely. So you, when you were out, I mean, did that feed into, you know, building F-bomb? Was that part of it, being out and on patrol and not having, you know, or maybe needing to take a bottle of olive oil with you on the road or some coconut oil or something like that? Where did you guys get this idea, and when did you decide to pull the trigger on it?
Actually, I'm old enough. I've been out of law enforcement now for 12 years, and the last 10 or so I had worked in the renewable energy, wind energy business, traveling around the world. And I was spending a lot of time in India or Japan, and Kara and I were getting little Ziploc bags and filling them with oils and fats and making our own blends to put in coffee. And of course they would leak, so we'd put them inside an Nalgene bottle so you don't end up with the, Kara calls it the luggage emergency or disaster. And it was really that, you know, you can find proteins almost anywhere. You can find vegetables almost anywhere. But we're always reluctant to use the salad dressing at a restaurant. You don't know how much sugar it has in it.
Good oil or bad oil or
yeah. And so it was the fat component that we felt was hard to get when you weren't home. And that's what led us to start making our own stuff. And then we realized, of course, that if we can't find what we want, there's a hole in the market. So
other people might want that too.
Yeah.
And they do.
So we were both working full time. Kara was working as an accountant, and I was working in the wind energy business, doing training and project management. And we started doing this part time in 2015. And that's what led to where we are now.
And I can also imagine traveling to places like India. You know, you probably don't want to be, you know, eating something that's been washed in water over there or anything like that for fear of food poisoning and things like that, right?
It's just part of going there. I mean, and I knew I would go there and I would have the issues for a week or two and then I'd be okay. But yeah, I think it's hard, especially the places I was working. They were not the tourist areas. We were out in the middle of the Thar Desert or down in villages that you had to hike back to in Tamil Nadu. And yeah, you kind of are stuck. And there's this acclimatization process where you just kind of, you go through it.
Wow. But, wow.
Yeah. Having the extra fats was healthy or helpful.
Yeah.
So when you get into this, when you get into this and you start doing it part time, how did that come about? Were you just packing? Did you have like a little space to work in? I went to your original space. Was that the space you were in out there with the incubator, or was it something you had just started doing in your job, in your garage or anything like that?
Actually, the FDA and the health department rules won't let you sell product across state lines anyway, or outside of your local region, unless it's in a commercial inspected kitchen space. So we started in, was it May of 2015?
Put the company together, set the LLC up and did all those details in May of 2015. And then when did we move? We did move into a space that you didn't see. It was a smaller space in there's an incubator facility here in Flag.
Right across the parking lot. So the space you saw was 966 square feet. We started across the parking lot in a little 400 square foot space. We got it approved, had to do a couple minor things in there to get it set up as a commercial kitchen space, but we got it inspected and approved. And in about August of 2015, and then started our first sales were October 15th of 2015.
Yeah.
In that little space.
Oh wow, that's pretty awesome. And so how much were you just going in there after work at nights and just grinding up things or filling up packages and things like that?
Exactly. Oh my gosh, yeah. You know, and you talk about the entrepreneurial start. The typical process, if you want to start a food business, most people go down a path of finding a co-packer, a contract packager, and you tell them what you want and what kind of product and what kind of packaging, and they'll help you formulate it. And they make a bunch of it, and then you just sell it. And
like really a lot of it.
Yeah.
A really big pile of it, whatever it is.
Their minimum order quantities are usually pretty large, and the investment's large. And we realized that for us, we would rather build something local and have that control of quality and not be locked into having 200,000 packets of one thing. So we took what money we would have spent with a co-packer and instead bought some small equipment and were able to be a little creative about packaging that allowed us to launch with four different SKUs, four different products, instead of just 200,000 of one thing.
One thing. I think that was really helpful, and that was Ross's genius to find the equipment and figure out that we could do it ourselves. It wasn't that out of reach that we needed to hire.
She said genius. She called me genius. I'll have to record this and save it there, Chris. you know, we started with these packages and we had them custom made, and we found a supplier that was able to produce pretty small quantities, but you still have to pay for, and for those not on video, I'm holding up a packet, you know, you have to pay for print rollers for every color. So there was a black and a red and a white, which meant if we had a different product, it would have a whole different set of print rollers. What we did was we left a section blank on the front and the back of the packet and got clear labels with white printing. And so we were able to buy enough pouches to meet the minimum purchase requirement, the minimum order. And then we put labels on the front and back.
That was one of those painful things you were talking about. That was one of those.
So you were literally going through each package and putting on, you know, macadamia nut butter with sea salt, macadamia nut butter with coconut butter, like just slapping those on.
Yeah. And we were having to put one on the front and then one on the back that had all the nutrition information, the ingredients, the barcode. And so we took a pack, the pouches we were paying, we paid a little extra to have rounded corners. We wanted them to be durable and comfortable if you put it in your pocket or something. But we were paying at the time, I think, 14 cents per pouch. And then 11 or 12 cents for the front label and 17 cents for the larger back label. So we tripled the cost of the pouch. And in retrospect, maybe that wasn't the best thing because it increased our cost, but it allowed us to launch with several different products and then do some product testing. Try one, see if it works.
Having that flexibility was great.
Yeah.
Test things out. We only dropped one variety.
Yeah.
We had a plain macadamia with no salt, and it had two loyal fans, but that was kind of it.
There were a lot of evenings where we would sit there with, we made a little hand crank labeler so you could crank it and it would feed the label out and you put the packet on it on the front side. And there were a lot of evenings with a glass of wine labeling pouches. And
my hobby for a while.
Yeah, it was a pain, but it allowed us though to get into multiple SKUs at launch. And I think that's part of
a good trade-off.
What made it attractive to people.
And so when you were putting this thing together and you were trying to figure out what types of fats to put in, so, you know, just to go through your product variety from, you have your fat packets, you have that MCT oil, the coconut oil, the olive oil, and then you've also got your fuel packets, which are a macadamia nut butter base with, you have one that's with coconut butter. One that's just with macadamia nut butter and sea salt, one that's with chocolate, and you have a new variety coming out that's going to involve, I don't know if you want me to say what it is yet or not, but
sure, it does. It came out last week.
Macadamia nut butter with pecan, and I absolutely love it. It's awesome. It's delicious as hell. So when you were sitting, what made you decide on the macadamia nut butter base?
Primarily the good fat profile. You know, macadamia nuts are very much a premium nut. They were not the cheapest nut by any stretch of the imagination to use, but you know, almond has a lot of protein in it. All the other nuts, except maybe pili nuts, have pretty high percentage or ratio of carbohydrates, and we wanted as much fat as possible because, again, finding the protein or even finding healthy carbs was not the challenge for us. It was finding the
good fat.
And we heard an interview. an interview with a world record holding ultra runner. And in the interview, he was talking. He was asked. He's keto, and he called it his secret weapon, and he was asked about one of his favorite snacks. He said, "I love macadamia nuts, but they're hard to eat when you're running." And we said, "Oh, we could grind them and put them in packets." And there are a couple of sources of macadamia nut butter in jars, but nobody at the time, and I think still, was putting macadamia nut butter in pouches, which was kind of our goal. Our whole focus was on finding the extra fats when you weren't home.
Portability.
Yeah, portability was always one of our key tenets. And so we started with the macadamia nut butter. We did some investigation. We ground it. We tried different roasts and grinds and came up with one. If you just grind macadamia nut butter like you would peanut butter or anything else, it comes out almost like as smooth and creamy as maybe sour cream. Mm-hmm. It's got so much fat. It's really creamy. We wanted a few little nuggets in it, something we kind of joke, something to do to pick out of your teeth and chew on after you've had the pack and, you know, to keep you interested. Yeah, a little texture. So we had to get some grinding equipment and then modify it to grind with the fines or small particles in it. It took a bit. It was a challenge. And macadamia nuts don't have a very long shelf life compared to other nuts. But the foil barrier liner in the layers of our packaging really helps with that. So we've got a good 14-month shelf life, and we're confident with that. And it's worked out well, but it was not the easiest nut. If you were looking to start a nut butter company, picking a macadamia nut, again, looking back, some of the things we do now, we're really glad we did. But when we look back, we think, wow, why did we do that?
What amazes me is you know, the for containing macadamia nut butter, like if you go into the bulk foods aisle at like a Whole Foods or any place, if you try to get raw macadamia nuts or even roast macadamia nuts, I think they're like $18, $19 a pound or something like that in the shop. So this is actually a really cost-effective way of getting macadamia nuts into your diet. Like it's pretty fantastic what you guys have done here. Tell me about the scariest moment at the beginning. What was the scariest part of this whole thing for you?
Well, I know. I think the scariest moment was when I induced on Kara. So a quick background. I mean, we get along so well, but we look at things and approach things very differently. Kara's very analytical. Great. Yeah, it's helpful. Great. Kara's very analytical. She'll create a spreadsheet. She has this amazing documentation of every cost, everything. She calls it the mother sheet, the spreadsheet of all spreadsheets. And, you know, I'm more, I heard somebody interviewed of, I don't remember who that was, but somebody was interviewed and they said, you know, I'm more the kind of person who makes a promise and then figures out how to keep it. Mm-hmm. And so I announced to the world that we were going to start sales on October 15th of 2015, which is how we know that date so well. Mm-hmm. And Kara had a bit of panic, like,
we were not quite ready for that.
You what?
You told people that?
And that was a scary moment. But again, in retrospect, you know, it forced us to meet a deadline, and we were up all night for several nights after that filling orders. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't change it. Maybe Kara would change
it. No, that's good. We're a good counterbalance to each other that way. So that's good.
She tempers me and I draw her out. Yeah.
That's so awesome. And
not too much terror though, really.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, sometimes it's right before you're beginning to launch a product or start a business that, you know, you get those really, really terrified nights, and then it's like, this thing's really going to happen. This thing's really going to open up. We're going to be doing all this stuff. And you know, I've definitely been there on a couple of different occasions. So at the beginning, how did you develop your initial following? How are you getting people aware of the product?
Our first sort of, I guess, exposure to the keto community came through Jimmy Moore's podcast. Mm-hmm. And we had read Jimmy's books and had reached out to him before we started sales. We were on a budget. We were self-funded and, you know, so we had a limited amount of money, but he was gracious and was supportive of what we wanted to do, which was bring a keto product to the market that wasn't filled with a lot of extra junk. And we reached an agreement to sponsor his podcast. Mm-hmm. And
that was a little scary.
Yeah.
That was a commitment of, you know, our own money going into that, but it worked out really well.
And so, you know, we still work with Jimmy as we do with you. You know, we respect him and his podcast and what he's trying to do. His mission is good. And he's a good authority figure in the keto world. And so it was his podcast that sort of exposed us. And then for quite a few nights after that first launch, we were packing orders and grinding stuff and trying to keep up. But that was our exposure. But really, we focused on trying to be as organic as possible and work through social media. Neither one of us have had an interest in the past in social media. I never had a Facebook account until we started one for the business. But we found that Instagram and some of the communities and support and comments we've had on social media have really been key to expanding our awareness. We don't have your following, but, you know, we're doing pretty good.
Come along.
Yeah. Well, I'd say you guys are doing awesome.
Remember when we...
Yeah. I definitely think you guys are doing awesome. It's because you got a great product and people rave about it. And, you know, I think it's also because anybody who comes in contact with you, you're great people. You know what I mean? And anybody I've known who's ever come in contact with you has said the same thing. So was there like a lot of like travel, were you doing a lot of trade shows at the beginning? Were you putting the name out there in those ways? Were you, or was it literally just, what was that?
Just a few. We went to Paleo FX where we met you. I guess we went to...
Would it be okay to say that the best part of Paleo FX was meeting you? No, we met some other people there as well. You know, Joe Dell and some other people. Paleo FX was a good fit for us because their product is also paleo, but they were not at the time very supportive of keto. I know they've jumped into the keto world, but we went to some of those primarily because we thought you have to.
We went to another one that was more general fitness, and the more focused events we attended, the better the outcome. We ended up meeting some really great people. KetoCon, Low Carb USA, those were really good.
Awesome. Yeah, this year we've actually pared down quite a bit. And right now we only have commitments to be at two actual conferences. One is KetoCon down in Austin, Texas, and the other is the Low Carb USA in San Diego. And we are probably not going to go to others. We're going to be busy. We're going to be at several of the Ragnar events. We're going to an American Diabetes Association event up in
California.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I think Napa and wine country. But I think we're only going to those two conferences this year. There are some others that are really good, like the what's the truth? Tripping over the truth. A very technical conference. I would love to get to that, but it's just not in the cards this year. Yeah.
There are a lot out there.
You know,
it seems like,
and we found the.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
To be just meeting people more than, I know some people go to these things and they want to sell a bunch of product and they want to get new accounts. And we were actually, for most of us, we were a little afraid of that.
Yeah.
We didn't want to overdo, but we also, I remember going to Paleo FX. I was hiding behind the screen trying to fill orders to mail from there. And we didn't have a lot of extra product to try to sell there. We were kind of making everything just in time production.
Yeah, no, I don't know if you knew that we literally behind the screen had a printer set up and we had a bunch of product in the back of Keto One, you know, our vehicle, and we were filling orders. And then every day in the afternoon, we were sending some of our friends out to the post office to send orders because it was just the two of us.
Yeah. And
if we were gone for 4 days, that meant orders wouldn't go up for 4 days. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's
you've seen all the stages here, Chris.
definitely, you know, in the beginning, you're stretching yourself out thin and you know, you got to figure out some creative ways to do things. It seems like keto's almost everywhere right now. You know, 6 years ago when I started the ketogenic diet, I was almost afraid to talk to people about it because I came from the bodybuilding world. I was a big muscular guy at the time, but if I was telling people that, you know, 75 to 80% of what I was eating was fat and, you know, I wasn't eating 250, 300 grams of protein a day, that, you know, people would look at me like I had three heads. Where do you see this movement going? Where do you see the whole movement behind ketosis going?
Let me just address your earlier comment when you said people speak nicely of us, and I appreciate that. But I think part of it is that we were not looking for a trend or a fad or noticing that, hey, keto's trending upward, and, you know, we're in it because we needed something. And I think people recognize the genuine approach there. We are really excited that more and more people are talking about keto. We're also kind of excited. I've had to get talked off the ledge a couple times, and recently I had to delete a post where I was a bit maybe rude, but, you know, you see so many anti-keto articles now. And I think that's a good thing. You know, the keto community and the keto awareness and all of the success and benefits that people are seeing are challenging some of the traditional teachings, and people who have been entrenched in keto and taught that and told everybody that, you know, a grain-based, fiber-based, low-fat diet is the way to go, or getting their worlds rocked a bit, and are retaliating by writing a bunch of articles about how bad keto is. And I think that's all a sign that it is becoming more mainstream, that it's becoming more well understood, I guess, and more accepted. You know, I'm with you back, you know, then tell people, yeah, I'm doing Atkins. And people would say, well, you're not fat, you're not overweight. That's not why I was doing it then. And that's still not why I'm doing it. I kind of maintain my weight. I get hungry and I just feel really good.
Good. Yeah. My guess is that it is a trend. And it's also, I think that popularity will peak and then it'll kind of level out, but it'll be much more widely known and accepted. And that's great.
Yeah. I think more and more people are realizing that fat is not the enemy. And even the, you know, very quietly a couple of years ago, the U.S. government changed the guidelines on cholesterol.
Right.
And they didn't say, hey, we've been wrong.
No, they didn't
come out and say, hey, folks, we've been wrong all these years. Eat as much cholesterol as you want. They just very quietly changed it to say, eat as much as you want. It's no longer a nutrient of concern. Mm-hmm. But I think the restrictions on fat will just kind of quietly become less.
Fade away.
Yeah, they'll fade away.
Yeah, it's interesting to see like these, it's almost like the last gasp of a dying paradigm, right? Where we see, you know, the stuff that came out about coconut oil, I think it was like 6-7 months ago, where they were saying that nobody should be eating coconut oil. It was never good for you or anything like that. When we know that it's a fantastic source of energy, it's antimicrobial, it can seriously help your digestion, reduce inflammation, a whole host of different things. And then, you know, we saw that, I think that article that you post, or well, you might've posted on Instagram. And then I think somebody made you take it down, but about the Men's Health article that said you don't want to be in ketosis. It's a dangerous kind of thing that's going to make you feel like crap or anything like that. And I think people are getting more and more educated, but for so long we've been kind of bullshitted about our nutrition, and it hasn't helped any of us. And you know, there's so many things going on out there right now. You know, we're finding that more and more that disease is a result of inflammation. We're finding that mental illness many times is a result of inflammation. So I think, you know, we're at a weird point in history right now. We're at a really weird point because people are starting to wake up to certain things, and then people are also reacting. And there's a very reactionary element that's against the high fat, low carb movement out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that reaction is a sign that maybe we're on to something, and maybe more and more people are figuring it out. Like you said, you know, it's reactionary and defensive and the last gasp. And you're right, that was the article. And because I said it, I used a word in there to describe it.
You were unkind.
I was unkind, and I should have been more kind. But just, we have United Healthcare as our insurance, medical insurance provider. And I just got this long newsletter article about how to eat better and the 9 foods you should be eating. And one of the things they, of course, they said, eat more grains, eat a whole grain diet, lean meats, low fat. But then it said, and for oils, eat healthy oils like olive oil or canola. I'm like, really? Canola? Rapeseed oil? I was just shocked. Of course, there's nobody there to email or, you know, but there's still a lot of bad information. But I think you are absolutely right that more and more people are getting their eyes opened and becoming aware and
it'll happen
and experimenting on themselves.
Yeah.
Kara and I eat a little differently, and Kara's doing more experimentation right now with even dairy-free keto. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for everybody to try to see what works for you.
Yeah.
You know, the whole N equals one, do your experiment on yourself and see, because you are different than I am. Kara and I are different, and, you know, I can have a little more chocolate than she can, or maybe not.
Yeah.
That's huge. I think that's a good way to eliminate. A lot of people are afraid, you know, they're afraid of fat, and that's what, you know, we've talked about with people. Do some blood work, try it, you know, try it for a few weeks and then do some more blood work. That's probably not going to kill you. Try it out, you know, see if it works for you. You can test these things. You don't have to just assume and just believe it blindly. You can test it.
Yeah.
And I really think that, you know, when we're talking about things like this, the whole vegan movement, there's a lot of vegans who are anti-keto and needlessly, in my opinion, because, you know, with the ketogenic diet, it's not a meat-based diet. And that's the thing that people need to understand here. You can load up on fibrous vegetables. You can get a lot of great micronutrition from that. And then with products such as yours, which is vegan, by the way, you know, there's not animal products in this thing. I mean, I definitely think that you know, a vegan could find a lot of benefit from doing the ketogenic diet. And then, you know, the other thing people have to realize is that there's more than one way to skin a cat, right? So you can find ketosis through intermittent fasting. You can find ketosis by doing 3-day fast. You can, there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can do this. But the point is that ketosis is part of our evolution. We developed the ability to do this for a reason. And that's because somewhere in our evolutionary history, actually for a good bit of time in our evolutionary history, food was scarce. It wasn't everywhere. We needed a fuel source to carry around with us when there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a good crop, or when, you know, we hunted out all the animals and things like that. When we were starving and needed to move, we needed ketosis. And that's why we're able to take advantage of that today.
Absolutely. And, you know, traditionally, the first parts of the animal that would be eaten and prized by the hunters were the organs, the organ meat, the offal and offal.
Good fat.
You're the wildlife biologist. You know, and then the lean cuts of meat would go to the dogs. And we've just completely changed that and gotten away from fat. And you're right about the vegan community. There is a bit of we've noticed a trend. We've had to fight that a little bit, where they will jump into our threads and talk about how terrible keto is on the assumption that we're proposing you kill all the animals and eat them all. And when we point out that there are keto vegan groups on Facebook and social media, and some of our customers are really avid ketogenic vegans, and that, like you said, our products are vegan or vegetarian friendly, and then they go, oh, okay. But there's that assumption that you're only eating meat. And there are a lot of people lately who are doing the, you know, all meat carnivorous diet. And if that works for them, great. But we eat a lot of broccoli and artichokes and other vegetables. And it's not what people think.
Right, right. I had Sean Baker on a few weeks ago. Great guy. I disagree with him a lot, but great guy. And he's been doing the all meat diet with no vegetables, nothing else. And he's developed quite a following. I mean, but the marketing there is like, hey guys, you want a diet? You'll be eating a delicious ribeye steak every single night for the rest of you. You know what I mean? Like that's awesome marketing. You can't beat that.
No, and that was a great podcast too. I know that one exactly. And you know, he talked a lot about how you can get all the micronutrients you need from meat, and he takes a little bit of supplemental stuff. But yeah, so I'm certainly not knocking that. But for me being keto, I found that for a long time I was eating too much meat. That was the problem, because as I came in through the Atkins program, I kind of thought erroneously that keto was all meat all the time, and it isn't. And so, but everybody's keto is different too.
Yeah. You know? Some people, lots of ways to do it.
You've met one of our customer friends who uses keto to control her epilepsy, and for therapeutic reasons, she's got to keep her ketone levels pretty high. If our ketone levels are lower, that works for us. And so we can tolerate more carbohydrates than other people, but everybody's got to figure out what works for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I used to eat 5 pounds of meat a day when I was a bodybuilder. Like that was, I used to go to the market every single day to try to find the budget meat, like the ones that was just almost to the expiration date. And like, I'd go home and I'd cook it up right away, come home from Costco with these big, giant packages of chicken breast and eggs and ground beef. And I'd cook it all up, and I'd spend like 3 hours in a day cooking. It was crazy. But, my last bodybuilding show I did, you know, using the ketogenic diet, and I looked great. I think I looked better there than any other bodybuilding show I'd ever done. And I placed second overall out of a very large class in the very first classic physique competition in the MPC. And, you know, I was eating 1 to 2 meals a day, literally, and very, very minimal protein. And, you know, I was getting lots and lots of fats in, but that's how it went. And, you know, anybody who says that this thing can't work is, I don't care if you say you don't like the diet. I don't care if you say that it's not good for you, but for you to say that it's unhealthy and can't work or anything like that, that's just talking out of your ass, in my opinion. You know what I mean? So.
Yep. Totally. Totally. Yep. No, we agree. And of course, you know, Robert Sykes, and he talks a lot about how he did his first bodybuilding competition, keto, and how pained everybody else was by trying to dehydrate themselves and get cut. And one person he'd competed with couldn't even finish the poses because I just did that on video. I shouldn't even do that because I look silly. But, you know, got cramped up and couldn't finish the competition after all that self-torture. And Robert, like you, probably just felt really good. Hey, I just modify a little bit at the end and I feel good. And that's why you do so well.
Yep. Yeah, it's very interesting.
You know, bringing this around, you talked about diet and everything, and bringing this kind of around to the veterans and the warriors, you know, one of our goals is to support the military and try to get more fat out to the places. You know, my oldest son is in Hawaii. He's in the Air Force. He's stationed in Hawaii. He can find fat there in surfing. But, you know, troops out at some forward operating base or a little post out in the middle of Afghanistan or something, they get what's choppered in, and we understand that. And so one of our goals is to work towards getting more fat out to the troops in a way that, you know, they can take it out with them and supplement the primarily carb-based food that they get out there. And like you said, you know, a lot of that causes inflammation and maybe a factor in TBI issues or making those issues worse or PTS issues. And yeah, anything we can do to help in that respect. And that's part of why we love your message.
Absolutely. And that's something I want to put out there to the audience right now, because I know you've asked me, I put this out on a couple of announcements on previous shows. But if you know of any unit that is currently deployed right now, and you have their FPO address, hit us up over here at the Warrior Soul Podcast, and we can put you guys in touch with Ross and Kara, because they've been looking to help as much as they can. And you know, I think that this is a big part of their mission. And the things that we're alluding to here are, you know, the idea that the food you're eating in those MREs, in many cases can cause a good amount of chronic inflammation. Now, you might not feel it right off the bat right now, but as you get older, what happens is you start to feel it in your joints. You start to feel it in your back. You know, those of you who are serving in the infantry, I remember, you know, a lot of the guys who were just 24, 25, which is ancient, by the way, in the military. It's absolutely ancient. You're an old man by that point. But a lot of the guys who were 24 and 25, they were dealing with joint issues, knee issues, and walking around like old men. And a lot of that comes from diet. So, you know, and then the other point is this: if you do sustain a traumatic brain injury, it could become much more severe if you're in an inflamed state and can lead to significant problems down the line. So the point is that, you know, Ross and Kara are trying to provide something. You probably not going to be able to get rid of MREs, but you can at least supplement them with something that's anti-inflammatory, that's better for you. And so they want to send some stuff out there to the troops. And they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. So let us know if you have an address and we can get some sent over there.
Right on. Thank you. Great. We appreciate that. Yeah. We'd love to send some cases over there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks,
Chris.
Yeah.
You know, a few other things. So just going back to the entrepreneurial journey here, I went to this, I guess it was the second space that you guys had utilized. And I saw where you guys kind of started out and they have a great program down there in Flagstaff for entrepreneurs. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about that program and how that came about?
Sure. So in Flagstaff, like down in Phoenix too, they've got a great incubator program, but up in Flagstaff, they've got the Northern Arizona Center for Entrepreneurship and Technology. It's kind of a mouthful, and they've been in the process of rebranding as Moonshot, but it's a program in a building, a set of buildings now owned by the city of Flagstaff. Their mission is to help young businesses sort of fledge and grow. They provide support services there in the way of staffing, mentors. I know early on we talked to an attorney who comes up and mentors, and he's a patent and trademark attorney, and give us some good input there. And those services are really free. Plus they had rental lease space there and were very flexible landlords in that respect. We were able to move from one building to the other, and we had a 2-year lease in that space you saw, and we were not in there 9 months, I think, before we outgrew it. But they, as long as we stayed within the city of Flagstaff and we've built a business here with, you know, employees now, they were fine with us breaking the lease with no penalty. So all of those things contributed to, you know, an environment where I think we're able to be successful in part because of that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very helpful.
And it's a really cool space you guys have now, with a lot more production capability and a lot more ability to get orders out. You know, it's pretty cool to see how you guys are scaling this. It's pretty awesome.
It's awesome. Like you said early on, it's also scary. You know, I think the week before you were out, we'd spent 3 nights at the office there. There's a futon sofa upstairs. I mean, just trying to get caught up on things, but that's all part of running your own business because there's nobody to, I mean, the buck stops with you. Yeah, it's all you.
Absolutely.
Good.
Is there any bit of it? What would you tell a young veteran who's thinking about being an entrepreneur? What's the biggest piece of advice that you would give them?
Kara's philosophy. You can say it.
No, I can't.
And don't screw it up or don't F it up. Too many people, I think, are afraid. You've got to be willing to take some chances. But once you take a chance and you get some positive feedback and you have a good thing, then don't screw it up. We have been asked several times to put stevia in our product. And we kind of fought that. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big part of the reason that we are different and we're successful because, you know, we're true to our roots and we didn't want to screw up what would have been we don't want to screw up a great product by adding stevia to it when we don't use the artificial sweeteners. And in many times or in many cases along the path now, we've come to a point where we've said, yeah, stick to our guns. Let's not screw up what's working. And I think that's Kara's big bit of advice. And I'd
just add, I think it's good to, if you've got a mentor, you know, access to an incubator, it's good to get an outside perspective. You fall in love with your idea. I think it helps a lot to be solving your own problem. And that's, you know, that kind of means you at least have a market of you, you know, there's a need there. And then once you get a little bit of validation, it's always, if you can get somebody to buy the thing, that's great. And then once you've done that, then you just have to be persistent.
Yeah.
Once you know it's a little bit of a thing, then you can dig in and, you know, stick with it.
There's a lot of truth to the concept of a minimum viable product. You know, our first, like I said, our first package had a label applied to it. This package shape is not as easy to use or convenient as our new one. But if we had waited for perfection, and I think too many people get, what's the saying? You know, help me, Chris. What's the saying? You know, stalled by the perfection, the need for perfection. Mm.
Yeah, well,
there's a saying there, but
what's it called? It's paralysis by analysis,
or that perfection is the enemy of the good, or something. But
ma'am, no, and I see that all the time. You know, I train entrepreneurs for London Real through the London Real Business Accelerator, and I see so many people come through who are scared to make a decision. They're scared to take that first step. They're worrying about things like their logo or their domain name, and they're ripping their hair out about it for hours. And the thing is, I think that if you're going to get into this line of work, you got to worry about the big things first. You got to execute, because at the end of the day, only execution matters. That's it. Beyond that, all the little things you're worrying about, all the little things that you're tearing your hair out about, you probably move beyond those. It might be okay to create a package and just slap a label on it, or, you know what I mean? And you have to go through those types of things if you're going to try and succeed.
You know, you got to believe in yourself and take chances. You also need to listen to others, but I think ultimately you've got to believe in yourself and your product. Try it. It may not be perfect, but if people, like Kara said, if people buy it, that's your validation. We look back and we kind of joke that if we had gone into the incubator and said, hey, we want to sell packets of fat under the brand name F-Bomb, they might not have accepted us into the program. And that's not a critique on the program. We've shared this with them, but we had an idea. We saw a need. There was a hole in the market. We were fixing a problem for ourselves. Now, you don't want to get so sunk into something that nobody wants that you're just spinning your wheels or bleeding money. But we had faith because people were interested. We got good feedback when we launched. We got some good sales even initially, and that just told us we were on the right track. And from that point on, then you follow Kara's philosophy, don't screw it up.
Yeah. And that's the thing. If we're looking for steps here so far, number one, they scratched their own itch. They solved a problem that they had themselves. Yeah. And that's, if you can do that, you're ahead of the game in so many different ways, because if you suffer from that problem, then it's likely that other people suffer from it too. Number two, they got proof of concept, right? So they created a minimum viable product. They started putting it out there, and lo and behold, not only was it something that they wanted for themselves, other people were willing to pull out their wallets and pay some money for it. So if somebody's willing to do that, it's probably a good indication that your product will work. And the question is, well, how do you grow the thing? And the answer has to be gradually. You can't take on too much before you're ready. And they did that. Mm-hmm. They were working nights. They had their day jobs, coming back, grinding away, creating, filling up these packages and things like that, labeling themselves. And they spent some time doing this before they were able to hire people and move into a bigger facility. And then after a whole lot of work, bit of travel and a lot of word of mouth campaigning, they're now in a pretty big facility and able to fulfill a bunch of different orders, which is going to allow them to grow. And so, if you're out there and you're thinking about building a business, understand it's going to take a lot of work. Understand that there's going to be some sleepless nights where you're sleeping on the couch in the office three nights in a row. But also understand that if this is what you want, that's what you got to go through. That's what makes it worth it at the end of the day.
That's exactly right. Those were the steps. We're still working. We're still very much entrepreneurs, but it feels really good to be able to. We're just now at the point where we can start to help others. We're working with a local group that, works with the handicapped, and we've got crews from that organization in here three or four days a week now. And, there's still a lot of work ahead, but we see that light at the end of the tunnel, and we're in a position now where we can start doing some things to help others and give back. And that feels good. Even when you don't sleep, it feels good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I want to let you guys get back to work. I know that you're both very busy. I want to thank you for sitting down with me. Is there anything you want to leave with our audience? Any bits, tidbits of advice or anything like that?
I think Ross put it out there, but
yeah, no, I want to reiterate your offer. We would love to send, cases of product to the troops deployed. We do have a military discount that we just, with the new website launch this week, the app crashed. So it's not working right now. That'll get back up.
Back with us on that.
Yeah.
We do that.
But, we would love any feedback. And if you can get some addresses, we would even send the product to you, and then you could send it on just for, security reasons if necessary. But whatever we need to do to help facilitate that, we will.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. If you're looking to get yourself some F-bombs, and I highly recommend these things, they are absolutely awesome. I probably eat three of these macadamia nut with coconut every single day. I have a little method that I do with them, right? So I'm going to show you my method real quick for how I do this, right? So I'm going to rip this open. All right. So what I do is I bunch the nut butter up right there, right, like that. And then I get it right at the edge, right? Then I stick my whole mouth over the whole thing. So, and it all just goes down, right? It all goes into the mouth just like that. It's absolutely phenomenal. I love these things. These things fuel me throughout the day. They'll fuel you too. And, www.dropanfbomb.com. Really, really awesome stuff. Ross and Kara, I want to thank you for coming on today, and thank you for providing this amazing product to the world.
Thank you, Chris. And thanks for everything you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for all of you out there, remember this, if you've got an itch and you want to scratch it, just record how you're scratching it, right? Because that in turn could lead to a business that's going to change your life and that could help others and change their lives as well. And I want you all to get out there, take some action, and live your best lives while you can. With that, I will talk to you all next week.